Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Mark Hamrick, Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com. The December jobs report was released this morning, and he will tell us what it reveals. And Happy New Year to you, Mark.
Happy New Year to you, my friend. It's good to connect.
Absolutely. I know everyone's been waiting for this report. What's it look like?
You know, I think about some of the presents my mom used to get me for Christmas, and God bless her. I was always waiting for something a little better, but it looked a lot like what I got the year before. That feels a little bit like this jobs report. Lifesavers, for example, was a highlight back then. Just joking. I mean, that's true, but at any rate. this really does look a lot the same as what we had seen throughout the year. And a good example of that is 50,000 jobs added on the month. The average monthly jobs increase for 2025 was 49,000. It ends up being the case, Newell, that for the entire year, jobs creation was really lackluster, just nearly 600,000 jobs added. That compares to 2 million in the previous year. And so this was the weakest year for jobs creation since the pandemic year of 2020. Unemployment rate went down 4.4%. We'll take it. But this is really sort of a situation where it's a low hire, low fire job market. The good news is not that many people are being laid off, but the not so good news is not that many people are being hired as well. And you see that in the sector participation as well, where healthcare, social assistance continue to do the heavy lifting. Elsewhere, retail lost a lot of jobs here. The goods producing sector lost jobs, including manufacturing. So it's really is sort of a meh jobs report.
And, you know, that's the what, the outcome. What are the driving forces to these numbers?
Well, I think, first of all, let's think about, like, how did 2025 differ from the previous year? And there's a lot of volatility, a lot of disruption. The tariffs were probably the number one headline in terms of new policy during the year. Toward the end of the year, the Federal Reserve was cutting interest rates, but that doesn't really move the needle very much. And so I think there's a lot of hesitancy on the part of businesses, or don't really want to get out over their skis in the sense of bringing people on. But at the same time, they're not shedding workers in droves. And the data we also had this week on job openings, labor turnover, indicated that not that many people are quitting their jobs. So it really is kind of a frozen job market in some ways. And I do think there's some reasons to be optimistic for 2026. I don't think it's necessarily going to be seismic in the changes, but the continuation of the 2017 tax cut will put more money in people's bank accounts and actually have a lower effective tax rate. So there will be more discretionary income or just more money in the bank, broadly speaking. As we mentioned, the Fed has been cutting interest rates. It's slightly lower borrowing costs. Trump administration is trying to do something to bring mortgage rates down. I think, you know, we've already seen some impact on that in the marketplace in the last 24 hours. So affordability really is the number one challenge, I think. That's not a surprise. And the question is, how much is that addressed in the coming year? And I think it's really going to be more marginal improvement than it is going to be anything where we get to the end of 2026 and say, wow, everything feels so affordable again.
Mark, there's been a number of press conferences where the president and some of his spokespersons have addressed affordability and have given example after example after example of things that are more affordable today than they were maybe 2 years ago. Is that true or not true? Or do you see that in some of these sectors where things are more affordable?
Well, it's cherry picking, Newell. That really is the problem. And then so if you're like me, you go to the grocery store and you see, OK, we're not buying beef this week, but maybe pork or chicken is sort of the choice in the protein department. And you know, a lot of it's been self-inflicted. Fortunately, the administration backed down on the worst of the tariffs for things like bananas, coffee, and more recently on the Italian pasta, which I've never really understood why it was we were sort of put the Italians in our gun sights. But at any rate, I don't think Americans are feeling that, and we don't really see it in, let's say, the broad brush strokes of how we measure inflation. And the other part of it is, Newell, you know, we talk about inflation, you and I have for a long time, but, you know, most Americans don't talk about the inflation rate on a month over month or year over year basis. That's totally irrelevant to their lives. That's the thing that economists, journalists, and central bankers talk about. It's the price levels that really bum them out. And let's just, you know, when we're looking at inflation moving up at slightly less than 3% on an annualized basis, that means that we're continuing to build on the price increases that had occurred in recent years. And so there are also areas where there's outsized price increases or cost increases. The areas come to mind, of course, the price of housing has risen about 50% since the pandemic. A new automobile costs about $50,000, and borrowing costs haven't gone down that much from the peak. Of course, health care, insurance for homes and cars. So even if we just sort of have this average inflation rate of just below 3%, that doesn't help to make up for the areas that can knock you out of your stride when you're trying to buy something that is perhaps more significant.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
So in some respect, then, we're still paying for the ills of the supply chain disruption that we experienced during the time of the pandemic. Prices went up at a very quick pace, but they're not coming down at that same pace, right?
No, they're not really coming down notably at all. And there were really, I would say, three dynamics. That one you just mentioned is the number one dynamic that pushed prices higher. Russia's invasion of Ukraine, sent commodities prices significantly higher. Of course, people are celebrating the relatively lower cost of gasoline these days. We'll take that when we can get it. And then the third thing is there was a lot of fiscal stimulus that was pumped into the economy by Congress, which, you know, I can remember when then Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, who worked for the Trump administration in the first term, was saying, you know, if we don't pump a lot of money into the economy, we're going to be facing something like a 25% unemployment rate. So they did that. That was basically a bipartisan effort. It wasn't that one party was doing it and another one was protesting. There was a sense that you did need to do a lot. But in the end, it probably was too much. What you did get was the fastest recovery among the major economies of the world, being centered in the United States. The recovery was robust. But with that, there was a true price to be paid. And, you know, I don't think anybody's really looking at prices coming down significantly. I think it's more about a leveling off in the rate of the increases.
Mark, there's been a lot of talk about whether or not the Trump administration has had the successes that they were looking to achieve relative to regulatory changes. And they connected the dots to that will help stimulate, right, new manufacturing here, development of new manufacturing. Is it still premature yet? Do you think that that's going to come to fruition? Will it happen?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let's just acknowledge that, for example, within this jobs report, we once again had a minus sign in front of manufacturing. And that's really been the case for more months than not in the past year. And The major index, which tracks manufacturing, which comes from a trade group called the Institute for Supply Management, the manufacturing data there has been anemic. I think at a base level, we all can concur that having a more robust manufacturing sector in the United States would have a lot of benefits. So there would be the employment, there would be the economic activity part, in some cases, national security, where, you know, we need to be able to produce a lot of things in the United States in case supply chains are disrupted abroad, particularly from places like China or Taiwan. But it just hasn't happened yet. And I think that that is going to be a process to watch over a period of years, not months. And if it happens, it's probably going to be something that we would be talking about, you know, in 2027, 2028, 2029. And then the question is, how much do we actually reshore to the United States as opposed to manufacturing capabilities being just sort of taken out of places like China and taken to other countries? And I think, unfortunately, there's more of that going on.
Yeah, it's I guess some of this how do I phrase this? It seems as though there are some particulars of this that really seems to be confounding folks inside the Beltway in Washington. Is that a fair way to put it?
Well, I would say, as one who's resided around that area for many decades, the state of confoundment is a perpetual one, particularly among elected officials. I mean, I think, unfortunately, and this isn't a surprise to anybody, you have a situation where the political divide is so significant, the common good of Americans is not the priority of elected officials by and large. I would say most of that blame is cast on members of Congress. And so where do we meet in the middle on solutions that, you know, I think reasonable people could agree on? Just look at the federal government shutdown as a good example of essentially a wasteful process. We are facing the prospect of that at the end of this month. And, you know, among the biggest issues that I look at from a financial perspective is the failure to address the looming shortfall of Social Security. That's been on the radar screen for years now. But, you know, God forbid elected officials would do something to help the balance of the American people.
Yeah. And I mean, the over and under, I wonder what it's going to be, whether or not we're going to have another government shutdown.
Yeah, I mean, there has been a so-called minibus bill moving through, and you know, there's a decent chance that gets passed. But I don't want to bet my money that Congress is going to overperform on its performance.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see when we see that inflation number drop, and it was at 4.6, right? And it's down to 4.4. Is that correct?
Inflation peaked with the consumer price index as high as 9.1% in June of 2022. So that was, you know, getting back to numbers that were more akin to the 70s and 80s. And lately it's been tipping below 3%. And I think that's the expectation for this year, that we'll have the consumer price index rising in the 2% range.
I was referring to the unemployment rate. I'm sorry.
Okay, sure.
Was at 4.6 and now at 4.4. Crystal ball. You know, these employment numbers all over the place. What is the target for the Fed relative to that number? Mm-hmm.
Good question. Well, number one, I think the Fed just doesn't want to see a sharp rise in unemployment, and we haven't seen that. It's been, as I said, a low fire job market, and one of those is optimal and one of them isn't. By the way, the November unemployment rate was revised lower in today's update, so it actually went down to 4.5%. You know, you think about the worst episodes in American history, and we can just leave it at recent episodes, relatively speaking, the unemployment rate rose to 10% in October 2009, coming out of the great financial crisis. It was close to 15% at the worst of the pandemic, and we're nowhere near that. So I think it's more about trying to enable stability for the job market, and I would say we are essentially seeing that, but some people are raising the question, I think it's a good one, is that, you know, the estimate, for example, I'll get to the question in a second, the estimate for GDP in the final quarter of last year right now is running quite hot. And yet we have all the jobs data for that quarter, and jobs creation was lackluster. So one question would be, what happens if we get to a situation where growth in the U.S. actually, you know, starts to fade? Does that mean the job market does even, you know, less than what it's been doing? And I think that's one of the things that's on the mind of Federal Reserve officials, among others. In other words, could it get worse from here?
Yeah, very. It's very interesting. These affordability issues, though, it's getting harder and harder to get my head around it. But I can tell you, down here, it's insurance with housing. Yeah. I mean, it has completely killed the housing market down here. I mean, the numbers are staggering as to what people are facing, and I think that's why our out migration numbers are as strong as they are. They can get more home for less money and less insurance costs in other places, you know, within a driving distance of Louisiana. Yeah.
Not unusual among any number of different areas around the country where these insurance costs are just sort of out of sight. And I don't, unfortunately, know that there's really a global solution for that either. And as you know, extreme weather events are part of the story there. You know, there are probably some regulatory issues that are related to this, but that's not really the chief dynamic. And so that goes back to what I was saying before. You know, do you think there's a reason why insurance costs should go, should not be increasing at all in the future? And it's really hard to come up with a scenario that allows that to happen.
Yep. For sure. As always, we truly appreciate your time. Mark Hamrick, Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.